But
Yeah, I know you don't like the sound of your own breathing, but sometimes Discord does give us ball ache, doesn't it? And also, I don't mind.
I mean, they all give us different kinds of ball ache.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd have think we'd have cracked it out by now.
Yeah,
I mean, I think Discord
is the most sort of down the middle reliable for me, at least.
I mean, I was flabbergasted to find out that my parents actually installed a printer on Linux with no help from me whatsoever.
Yeah, you did mention
that's been the way for a while, though, especially with, like, you know, big brand name inkjets.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was a laser printer, I mean, brother. I think it was.
Brothers always been brothers have always been absolutely fine for me because I used to use brother. The first laser printer I bought was a brother. Plugged it into Linux and it just worked. Okay. Because I don't think they put too many stupid layers of, you know, their own thing on top.
It's literally
using, like, proper, you know, the kind of printer driver that worked for 40 years, but that everybody adds shit on top of to make it.
Yeah.
You know, you need to use their thing, you know. Anyway, I'll get into that. And today's Wordle, well, this is a spoiler. This is the 19th of June, 2026, Friday the 19th of June. So if you haven't played the Wordle and you want to, mute for like 10 seconds.
Okay.
The fucking Wordle today was emoji, not a real fucking word. There you go. You can open your ears again.
I do think, like, I definitely lean with linguistics. I lean opposite of prescriptivist?
Anarchist.
Not anarchist. This is prescriptivism and descriptivism. I lean descriptivist. Language is the language that's used by normal people.
I do think
we've lost the distinction between formal English and informal casual slang.
Yep.
A word like emoji, I think that's a slang. That's slang.
And no,
I think
it's a word. It's a proper. Is it a proper noun? It's a noun.
It's a new word.
It's a real word. It's just one of those things they added to the dictionary to be cool. I know this word.
It describes a thing.
You know, words get added all the time. That's, you know, I get that. There are
There's an obvious problem with prescriptivism. With prescriptivism, you have an authoritative version of the language, and it can deviate from the language that people actually use day to day. And then what's the point? But descriptivism has a problem whereby what qualifies something being a, if one person says it and two people understand it, is it then a word? Like a word, you know, a dictionary word, a valid word. There are problems on both ends, but I think we've gone to, in this postmodern era, we've gone to, like, yeah, just fuck it, everything's all right.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what I was going to say. The problem is they've gone into all the dictionaries trying to be trendy and add a new trendy word.
It's all gone woke.
Headlines.
Six, seven will be in there next year, you know.
It's always before Christmas. They go for the headlines before Christmas so that people are like, I'll buy a dictionary for my child.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's all it is. So they're like, they've put, what's this, looks maxing has made it into the dictionary, you know.
I mean, emojis is a thing that's a word. What is the non-slang version of the term emoji?
Picture.
No, that's not it.
It's a picture.
It's closer to say hieroglyphics.
Maybe. But nobody called an emoji until fucking, I believe, Google took ownership of them. So now the official ones belong to some tech
company. I mean, they used to be emoticons or smileys, didn't they?
Emoticons.
They're different.
No, they're not.
Emoticons are when you do a colon dash bracket and you've got a face. That's an emoticon. Yeah. An emoji is a little picture.
Smiley. I would say the text version, I would say, is a smiley. An emoticon is a picture. It's got the word icon in it.
That's it. Hamish has had enough. All right. Well, this episode didn't last long.
The text one is a smiley. The emoticon is an emote icon.
Is emoticon a word then?
No, not really. It's a neology. It's always uncomfortable when a new word enters the world, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's especially when it's one you're not familiar with or not comfortable with. But I do think we need a distinction between, like, formal English and informal English. I mean, dictionaries make the distinction, but we don't in general life make that distinction. Well, no, we do. We do in certain circumstances, but it's all like unwritten rules, like a lot of English.
Well, yeah, but people had this conversation when blog entered the dictionary.
The problem with blog is it's an ugly word.
It is an ugly word because it's like blob. Just
yeah, yeah, just we could do better than blog.
Well, we haven't.
I mean, I'm also a little bit. I can't think of the word, but whatever it is, I'm a little bit it about like because a blog is just a journal.
Yeah.
Do we need a specific word for a journal on the internet? Does that mean a specific word? Really?
Oh, good point. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we've kept this going then. Excellent.
Well, I mean, again, it's like a blog is like it's fine. It's a word that describes a thing. You're right. It's an ugly word, but it's
sorry. I just have
it's an ugly word. And is it not a somewhat unnecessary word?
Well, many words are unnecessary. As you like to point out, many letters of the alphabet are unnecessary.
I do hate some of the letters. Yeah, but usually, English is very rich in synonyms, right? Because of the language's history of being, you know, a car crash of various languages. We're very rich in synonyms, but they each have, like, different nuance, which dictionaries are often very bad at capturing. But they are, you know, all of our synonyms, they very rarely mean exactly the same thing. Whereas, I mean, a blog is, you know, a more refined definition than a journal is broader. A blog is more specific. But I can't imagine losing anything by referring to my blog as a journal.
No.
Like, you get everything from context.
But then, like, I mean, yeah. So that doesn't move the needle.
But well, it gets rid of an ugly fucking word.
Don't use the word if you don't like it. Boycott blog.
Energy, Christopher.
Well, that's language, isn't it? That's particularly our language.
Well, no, because there is a descriptivist. There's all like we have dictionaries.
We have semicolons.
Do you
want to talk about semicolons?
I'd like to go pre-dictionary. Yes. Words don't have standard spellings. I think that was fun when you read medieval stuff, and like the spelling of word can change by the same author in the same sentence. Like they'll just spell it however they fancy spelling it at the time. I like that. Let's go back to that. And then dyslexia doesn't matter anymore. From a writing point of view,
no,
at least.
It's still worse because
it might be worse. I don't know.
The shape of the letters is sometimes the problem.
I worded that poorly. What I meant was when a dyslexic person is writing, they don't have to worry so much about spelling. They just whatever they feel, spell it that way, and everybody's cool with that.
If a dyslexic person writes, particularly handwritten, how do they find reading it back? Like, I mean, I suppose this is a question for the audience.
I'll ask one of my friends who's dyslexic.
If you write your own stuff according to how your own brain works, like reading your own handwriting, reading your own sort of like, if you
it's not connected to the, it's not the two things that are connected, it's the pattern.
Yeah, it's yeah, they sort of just, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I figure as much, but then, I mean, first of all, okay, it's a multi-part question. First off, is it easier to read your own handwriting? Second question because like dyslexic people, I'm assuming, don't misspell things consistently, right? Or
I assume not. Yeah, I would assume not.
But if so, is your own writing generally more easily to read?
I enjoy misspellings, and I enjoy like Shah, hyper intelligent but abysmal spelling. I think probably dyslexic. She did a corker the other day. I can't remember what it was, but it was like such a creative. It's so creative when you see people spelling words differently. I'll find them.
Yeah, those kids, eh? It's when they like use the number four instead of the word four.
Sometimes Danny will tell me things like,
but it's the title of a Prince song.
Daniel showed me things like, you know, like posts on the modern social medias, and the kids today with their, like the like you know the letter U R for your and stuff like that. I've kind of got used to that, but the absolute fucking lack of punctuation, like really, like, she's used to it, so she can read it.
Meaning's what you lose.
It throws me the lack of punctuation and the lack of punctuation and the abbreviated word, like, really throws me.
Okay. But where do we stand on the semicolon? Yay or nay?
I like the semicolon.
I like it is useful. It's a useful punctuation.
As I tried to say, but I get ranting. No, I'm calm now.
Yes,
what if you put a list? It's more, you know, where it's, you're not listing just single words, where you're listing like
If the list include commas, then you need a semicolon. Also, in a normal punctuation, I just see it as like, it's kind of halfway. It's when you don't know, should I have a comma or a full stop?
And no, that's not how it goes. That's not how it works.
No, that's not a semicolon. See, but this is the thing, Chris. You do know how a semicolon works, so why would you be against it?
Well, partly, like, journalists are not high-level writers. We write for the, you know...
Yeah, but you're usually... I mean, I knew some other journalists before I knew you, and they were... Oh, much better.
Journalists often follow a particular style guide. Because English isn't that formalised when you get right down to it. So they follow a particular style guide. And those style guides they're half good advice and half absolute fucking just received wisdom.
Yeah, like for some reason, names of ships got to go in italics. I don't know why.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about this one particular journalist I'm thinking of, and he was more of an article writer than a journalist as such. So that's probably why he wrote more formally, to be honest.
Yeah. I like to trash it up a bit.
He was published in Playboy a few times. He used to write the shit. What was it? He did one of the book. I think it was a book review column they did for the UK Playboy at one point.
I had no idea they did book reviews in Playboy.
Oh, you know, I rewatched Jewel. I mentioned I rewatched Jewel the other day. I wrote a long thing on my online journal about it. that apparently because it was originally a short story and that was published in Playboy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and they don't mention it. In the titles. They sort of avoid mentioning that by saying from his published work or something, or from his published story. that was also originally a TV film, so it was a short. It was only like just over an hour and 10 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Shot it and added some scenes and stuff. So anyway, let's talk about that film because
I got to talk about Drew's writing though.
Oh.
You don't start your subheadings with uppercase letters.
I've taken to not doing that. Yeah, just aesthetics.
Okay.
Yeah, I think part of my problem with English is that you're both right when you say a lot of the things you say, but you know it's a bit of a mess. But because of neurodivergence, I like rules.
Now, actually, what you said about semicolons specifically was correct there, both of you, when you were talking about the list within a list type of thing, or you need a comma within a list. I'm not necessarily talking about that particular...
Oh, you need to separate things.
Yeah. I mean, you can, in theory, maybe use like...
It's not the normal use of a semicolon. That's a sort of an adjunctive use, yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about... Well, let's say you've got a sentence in it as, here are some colours, colon, black and red.
Oh, yeah, you can do it, yeah. Yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah.
That's I would say that's an incorrect use of.
And that's the formal.
I've got
English. I don't think it's super nailed down. You can read. You can go to like three sources for what is grammar, and they'll each tell you like three different things about how a semicolon should be used exactly.
Okay, so the rule with a semicolon is it's actually more comparable to a full stop than it is to a comma. So the rule that I've been taught is if the two things that you are joining with the semicolon could be as well joined by a full stop, but they are corresponding, then you may use a semicolon. So
that's why I say it's between a comma and a full stop.
No, you guys are using it in a way that I don't even know about. Maybe I have just not taken it in, but it doesn't sound familiar to me even.
I
often use it when I'm tempted to use a dash. I don't like using too many dashes. So.
No, and now that AI uses dashes, we want to use them even less.
Well, I used to use the M dash as well to be fancy, the proper, because the dash on the keyboard is a minus, really, not really a dash. Mm. Well, it's for hyphenation and minus. The longer M dash, I used to use that to be fancy, and now that's like a telltale AI sign, so I've stopped that.
You can't win anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I've gone back to when I do use a dash to using the minus. Some people use two minuses together, dash, dash. I think actually...
I think that's because word processors automatically convert that into an M dash. I think that's over from that.
I think they do, but... also, I have seen it used in like Deus Ex, for example, where they use the what they would consider an M dash is to in the subtitles of it. So it's I don't know. Like
we do really on a standard ASCII or not ASCII, ANSI or what's the other one? that's not ANSI. The key, anyway, standard keyboards. We only really have a small section of the punctuation that's available, even in English.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not doing it for me in LibreOffice Writer.
I'm not saying necessarily all. I know Word did. Word did it a long time.
It did it when I kept it. After I typed a bit more, it went and did
it. Yeah.
It should do it automatically. If it's going to do it automatically, it should do it while you can see it.
Hmm.
You can undo it. That's a bit unfair.
I hate that automatic adjustment type of thing.
Yeah. Write what I fucking written. Don't. Auto correction on phones should not even be called auto correction. It's not most of the time.
It's auto fuck up. But the problem with word processors is when word processors started out, like ancient Hamish here. When I used the very first word processors at school, basically to learn how to use word processors, they were layout engines. Same as a publishing package, but without graphics, basically. And then people started using word processors
as writing tools,
You, if you're writing something, you shouldn't give a shit about what the font is or the layout or blah blah. You're not a fucking editor. You're writing it. See, I've done a few magazine, fanzine type things for clubs and stuff like that over the years, and people send you this thing and they've put this fucking font into it, and it's like, just send me the text. Send the text. Don't fucking send me something where you've chosen three different fonts for. Yeah.
I got that. Like, when I was making websites, and people would send me like the copy for the website in a fucking a Word document was the better option. I often get it in a fucking PDF.
Oh my god!
Oh yeah.
Just put the PDF up as the website. You're like, fuck you.
Just take a screenshot of the PDF.
Yeah. Do you know what really grinds my gears about that? Is when restaurants put their menu up on the website as a PDF. It's like what the fuck.
That's how they send it to the printers, isn't it? So
yeah.
Like, come on, it's not that much effort. Copy, paste into a thing.
In that case, honestly, I'd be more happy with them literally doing what I just said. Take a screenshot of each page and just put it in a fucking web page so I can scroll down and glance at it. Like, give me the PDF link as well. But
yeah. Fine. But of course, a lot of their menus are done on like landscape, so you have to scroll.
That would be horrible for screen readers. I should make that point. Like,
Actually, just the text is all you need. Like, we've over-engineered
Just pay somebody 2 hours to type.
Then you can choose your fonts and put your emojis in.
Yes,
if
you can.
Only using text.
Then you can update the menu.
Clearly, Chris does not want to talk about Maximum Overdrive.
Just before we get onto that, this is a complete tangent, but now I've got you here, I just wanted to ask something completely irrelevant to everything we've been talking about. Is it true that a dependency of the GNOME desktop is Flatpak? Do you need Flatpaks installed to have GNOME desktop?
I fucking hope not.
Not
something came up in this argument. Everybody's, losing their minds over the AUR, the Arch AUR. What's the word I'm looking for?
Attack or whatever.
It compromises. That's it. If you go on the Arch website, holy fuck, do they tell you before you use the AUR? This is at your own risk. Please check everything. Blah blah. Mm. You know, people are acting like they've dropped something into the main repository that's got. Some sort of bomb in it or something. And it's like, no, that's not how the fucking AUR. Some people say, there's lots of Arch-based distros out there that are, and it's like, well, they shouldn't be fucking using the AUR as a default thing.
No.
It doesn't seem to be for me on Arch.
No, there's a little script that someone released that checks for all the compromised packages to see if you've got them installed. No, they were all.
One that does it with the dates as well, so you can check when you last did it.
Yeah.
I hadn't updated for a few days. I ran it with the date. I checked that script before I ran it. I ran it with the date, the one with the dates, and then I knew that I hadn't done an update since then anyway. So I did have two packages. One was... one of them I didn't know what it was from. Mm. So I have no idea why it was there. But the other one was like a music-related, a synth or something like that that had...
Yeah, I mean, the only one I...
It's not what you should use. You should be using Flatpaks and stuff. It's like, well...
They have the exact same fucking problem. It's such a fucking non-issue. It's actually irritating me when people are talking about it. Like, yeah, warn people about it for sure, but it's such a non-issue to discuss. Like, it's a user repository. This can this is very easy to do, and therefore it will happen. It's not the same as a distro's repository, which has some safeguards in place. Nothing is completely secure. Yeah. But
well, that's what I said. When we got in this discussion in the Discord chat the other day, it's like, well, go and build it from source yourself, but be careful which repo you get this off from. I mean, one of the biggest repos that people are still using is compromised.
What repo is that?
It got bought by Microsoft. GitHub, is it? Got bought by Microsoft.
It's
compromised on a regular basis. The downtime's gone through the roof because they're trying to add tracking and telemetry to the use of the whole thing. You know, it's a fucking mess.
So long as they use GitHub.
As far as I can tell, on Arch, Flatpak's not a dependency of GNOME. But I do remember, because I try GNOME every now and then, see where it's up to. And last time I tried it, what you open, it's got like, because it force installs a bunch of applications. One of them's like a software manager, and it assumes Flatpak. If you open it and you don't have Flatpak installed, it's sort of like a blank, you know.
Okay, yeah, there's one like that for KDE as well, that assumes
that you want. No, because me and Rosie are setting up a
app or whatever the other ones are called. It's the same. What's the one that people use for server services?
Docker.
Pardon? Docker. If people get a Docker,
it's a deal,
It must be fine. It's in a Docker. It's like,
I mean, Docker containerization is a useful tool, and I make use of it now and then. But like, but the assumption that you're going to install something in a Docker, that's like, it's just so fucking lazy. Just give us the proper. Yeah. And the hero there is what's the streaming thing called?
Owncast,
yeah, Owncast is beautiful.
Owncast is an example of what everyone should be doing.
Yes,
it is very, very nice.
It is so, like, even I can do it, like, from memory. I barely need, because all it is, it's an executable binary, I think, and you just put it in the folder, and you run it, and then you're there. Like, it as a systemd service or whatever. But like,
It's beautiful.
Yeah, the installation is so simple.
And you can install it.
Having to follow anything that's external or uses some script you can't see somewhere. Yeah. It literally just, you know, as long as you trust PeerTube, Owncast themselves. You know,
I'm going to go for a quick piss.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll eventually talk about this this thing where we're.
Yeah. But no, the reason I ask about that is because
space virgins.
Rambling on the space virgins. How could have known? But the reason I'm asking is because I'm setting up. We're setting up Rosie's computer for Linux, and
she's using GNOME.
Well,
she's a Mac person, is she?
No, we're not going to go in GNOME. It was a consideration. Interestingly enough, and we're not going to go with KDE because it breaks every now and then. You'll get an update and just things tend to break.
I think that depends on which distro you're using, to be honest. It definitely happens on Arch.
Yeah, well, because Arch is always the newest version.
Arch is by design.
So I think for a beginning, we're going to try XFCE, which is a little bit of an interesting choice, but it's fast, which is one of the reasons she wants to switch over to Linux. It can feel like an older, you know, like a Windows 7 or a Windows XP, so she'll be quite at home with that. And it works.
There's the Qt version of that as well, which, you know,
But at the end of the day, like, the reason she's moving over to Linux is because she doesn't want cloud shit. She doesn't like the stuff on Windows now. Is like, you don't know what files on your OneDrive or on your hard drive.
If you've lost your internet access, half your documents disappear as well and stuff. They don't want you running your own computer. They want you connecting to their services to rent from, you know. I mean, that's the capitalist thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Everything's done as a rentier situation. Mm. You know, everything has got to be middlemanned
But it's particularly. It's particularly
What are you drinking there, Chris?
Oh, this is Ribena.
That was going to be my guess.
I thought it was some kind of cold tea.
Ribena is kind of a cold tea, really, isn't it?
You've just reminded me of a video I watched on Shediverse on PeerTube. There's this woman who does, like, she'll taste, like, all these different flavors of, like, every single product that's going and all that. And so it was some sort of monster, I think, the other day. And she held it up the jar, and it was the color of, it was exactly the color of, you know, not infected or hungover, but you know, the middle color of piss. It was like,
oh, right.
And it was like
middle piss,
middle piss,
middle of the road piss. You know, it was like,
okay, yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, Drew, I was just telling Hamish, we're going to go with XFCE as our disc.
Makes sense. Yeah, familiar.
Vaguely familiar. Stability is important. Speed is important. Because yeah, like the reason she's moving over is like partly a speed, like Windows 11 that came with it, slow as you know. It's just also there's she keeps getting like sports results and shit like that in the desktop.
It's not even like, I mean, there's no excuse for anybody. If it was tailored, you'd at least be like, well, I see. But like when it's tailored,
then they can't switch things.
Sports results. Like, what the fuck is?
Yeah, yeah. So it doesn't like. Yeah, the way they do shutdown is weird on Windows as well. Like when you just want to turn the computer off, just turn the computer off. Like, you know, why can't you do that?
Yeah.
So it's all the little things where it's like she just wants something a bit more straightforward, like what Windows XP was. Yeah. You know,
and I think a lot of people. Actually, I mentioned this morning. I was reading. It was, I think it was a thing about how to optimize your PC for gaming, something along that, how to make the most of your PC for gaming. And it started with, and this was sort of a normal gamer site, nothing, not remotely connected to like Linux community or anything like that, just normal gamery kind of thing. And it started, the opening sentence was, even if you're not switching to Linux to improve your gaming, here's some things you can do, blah, 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 blah. The assumption is that people are switching to Linux now.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, that was interesting.
Gamers was probably one of the best vectors to get into because they're already fiddling with things, and getting a bit more technical. And
also, Linux is fucking great for gaming now, and gamers generally are a bit more on the techie side. They understand you don't want fucking ads and faff.
Yeah,
and stuff, and you know,
it's not going to be optimized for gaming.
So it's and like Steam make everything easy on that side of things. Hardware support is excellent. I was trying out the like a wireless headphones, worked without a problem. Just literally because it uses its own dongle, it doesn't use Bluetooth. But that's fine. Dongle went in immediately.
I'm on a Bluetooth speaker the majority of the time, and it is just it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Fine as Bluetooth speaker can be,
I've been on Arch now since we tried it a year ago or something.
Yeah,
zero issues whatsoever. It's
yeah.
I did install, speaking of desktop environments, I did reinstall Window Maker, but on my huge monitor with like super high res, it's going to need some work to get it working. So
I love it. I was on Window Maker for a long time when I first switched to Linux.
Yeah, it is. It's still, it's still updated a bit. And it's still it's a great system. I mean, it was the snake oil salesman system, but it was never made it, so it doesn't really
matter. Yeah, I'm still on i3. Yeah. Perfectly happy on i3.
Yeah, just, why not?
You know, does everything I need.
And what I really need to do is get back to a tiling manager. But you know, it's just since I switched to one monitor, one big monitor, it just seems as easy to window things in it again. You know, laziness, to be honest. Anyway, are we going to talk about
this?
Okay, maximum overdrive. We've done half an hour of faff, so
no,
Chris is like, all right.
Another half an hour then first.
So both me and Drew have a score in our heads about this, although mine has varied a little bit. And
these two are going to ask me for a score, aren't they? And I thought, what should it
be? I'll say first of all that in when I started watching it, as soon as I saw that goblin truck, I was like, oh, I've seen this before. I remember seeing this like years and years ago for sure. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's quite an iconic image from the film.
But yeah, I have a range. I think both Chris and I are struggling to score this one, right? Shall I start?
Yeah.
Okay. In a nutshell, first half fucking horrible, like intolerable. Not even a movie. Like incoherent fucking mess of nothingness. Second half really redeemed it. Like second half was kind of like still not a great film. But like had some stuff going on, fun, there was motivations and you knew what the actual goals were. I think all the way through it, I think a good film like this needs to set rules. Mm-hmm. Like we need, like for example, Well, classic example is like Gremlins, very specific, like the rules are part of the plot. And then like Tremors. I compare this movie a lot to Tremors. I think Tremors is a perfect movie doing a similar thing. This is an absolute fucking mess. Doing a very similar thing. And Tremors sets up the rules. It's vibration that attracts them. They have these capabilities. You can do this to protect yourself, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas in this, it was just like whatever. I swear, I don't know. There was a bit early on where a kid's on a push bike when the baseball thing's happening.
Yeah, kid's on
a push bike and he goes like head over heels. And I'm like, was he sabotaged? Is it just machinery? Or does it have to be electronic?
Yeah,
there's like several people who are strangled by like Walkman leads.
No. There's another one. We'll get to that when it gets specific.
But the broad thing there's rules. Like it really didn't establish its rules.
Yeah.
Like the bread cutter or whatever it was.
It did something. It did something unconventional where it just goes right in from the first minute. It goes straight into the disaster. Mm. Usually. You'll introduce the characters in their normal lives. You get to know the characters. You have some characterization, and then the disaster, like they start to feel the edges of the disaster, and then it ramps up, and like that's usually. But this was like disaster right from the beginning, and that was odd. So in a nutshell, first half bad, second half a lot better, and my score range is somewhere between 3 and 6. I think.
Okay, interesting.
Score from me.
Yeah, go on, get a score
for I kind of agree with you, but because it comes out okay in the end, in terms of, you know, there is actually some organised plot by the end, by the sort of second half of the film,
yeah.
I'd say 7, because I like a lot of the silliness about it.
I looked it up somewhere, so I think I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes. I was curious just what the review said, and one review said this was not directed by Stephen King, this was directed by Cocaine. there's something to that.
Yeah.
It does feel very Stephen King in that he is, you know, it's sort of like he's got certain talents. He's a great prose writer and stuff like that. He's good at ideas. I don't think he's so good at plot.
Things as well.
Yeah, and if you've ever read it, the actual book, it is a million pages of fucking nonsense.
Yeah,
pulling in any fucking idea from anywhere and just shoving it.
No one like that. The Stand tends to go.
Yeah, Stand. Well, a bit more coherent. But...
there we go. Yeah, the more coherent.
Yeah.
So the Stand's one of those ones they've never really been able to make properly for TV or film. I don't think.
It's a TV movie.
There's a couple that are okay. There's a couple of versions of it that are okay, but not.
Yeah, they don't quite capture.
Yeah. That's why I thought a TV show of it was going to be a better one, but they didn't really. Anyway, sorry. Let's not get into something separate. Mm-hmm. Of course, you. Let's finish the score thing and then we'll start talking about specific bits.
Okay, so my score was actually wavering between 4 and 5.
I can see why you scored it lower. Both scored it lower than me.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things that sort of has a spot in my.
So for me, it's that it's almost like the counter to that. That era of film is just not some. It takes a lot to get me on board with that.
Mm.
I don't know what it was about that time. Maybe
it's definitely over time. Yeah. And some of the stuff we've watched and spoken about recently has definitely been inspired by this kind of film, not necessarily
kind
of film.
Yeah.
Things like that. The 80s, 90s, lower budget, less organized stuff. So something like, what were you talking about a minute ago? Gremlins is big budget and much more organized, for want of a better word. Whereas this is a bit more chaotic.
Mm.
And things like, even.
Chaotic is a good word for it. It's a chaotic.
Even Tremors, I think. I wouldn't put it anywhere near the same sort of polish level as Gremlins. I mean, it's way better than Gremlins as well, to be honest.
Tremors. I agree, yeah.
But Tremors was still, it's that same sort of thing. And I think that sort of 80s, 90s type of films like this and Tremors and some others kind of is the thing that a lot of the sort of retro-y vibe films are.
It's like Psycho Woman. It's harping back to exactly this kind of.
Which is why this came to my head.
Side note on Psycho Gorman, I've upped that to a 9.
I did see that when I was. Because I was looking the other day whether you'd rated this one to get some clues what I should rate it.
Yeah, I'm going to rate it like, I don't know, after this thing, because again, I can be talked around to these kind of things. I dismiss things that sometimes, like a lot of things in Psycho Gorman, I forget how a lot of the jokes stuck with me, and that's a really good sign. And I just drive around,
which is something this film has virtually no characterization. It has sort of archetypal characters like the ex-con with the heart of gold and the tough road lady, but like no characterization whatsoever. No. And it spends a lot of time with these characters not characterizing them.
Yeah, not bothering to make it any better.
That's probably the biggest like deduction of points category that is for me. Like I was thinking, what characters after watching the films, like what characters sort of like stood out, and it's like it's Bubba.
And even they were so committed to the archetype that even in a situation where the archetype would fall away a bit, in a literal survival situation, he would maybe stop being such a dick and at least work with these people for survival. He just maintains his like single rule, like, no, you can't touch my guns, or doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
Right, can I get on to the cast then, just for a next act? So we've got Emilio Estevez, who's like probably the best known person in it.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got Pat Hingle, who plays the Bubba character, who's well known
character actor.
Yeah. Laura Harrington, this is probably the only thing I know her from.
I looked her up. She was in a few things I recognise the name of, but yeah, not a ton.
I think she did a lot more behind the camera stuff than she did. Anyway, but some of the interesting ones to note: three people in particular. So there's the newly married couple. One of them is a guy called Christopher Murney, who was kind of another.
Lisa fucking Simpson.
He gets that. Yardley Smith, who's the voice of Lisa Simpson. She's the other part, half of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is she one of the hardcore? I know a few of the Simpsons actors, voice actors, are hardcore Scientologists. Is she?
Oh God, I can't remember.
I think she might be. She might not be. Don't sue me.
Politics and personal life. No, it doesn't seem to be.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Yeah, thumbs up for that. The other person who's in it, who you might have recognised, is of course Giancarlo Esposito.
Oh yes, he was in it, wasn't he?
I thought that's another bit where like so he gets electrocuted by an arcade machine because video games in the 80s are magic.
Yeah,
they don't behave like other machines. I mean, that's almost like it's maybe where he got the idea for Lawnmower Man. Because I thought that something Lawnmower Man was going to happen with him. I thought he was going to get like video game powers or something. Yeah. Like, he just died.
The other one, probably of note, if you think of any others in there, let me know. But is Frankie Faison. He's the trucker that comes in with face on it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been in all sorts of stuff, including most prominently, probably recently, was The Wire. It was in that, and there's a few. But there's a few other names in there, and you as soon as you see them, you're like, that guy. He was in all sorts of things. There's quite a few of them like that. But yeah, the ones that sort of stick out are Emilio Estevez, Pat Hingle, Yardley Smith, and Christopher Murney, and Giancarlo Esposito. The other one, of course, is right at the beginning, Stephen King.
The very first character. Yeah, he's a weird looking motherfucker. He looks very different now, and his whole life he's looked like fucking weird in completely different ways. Like he is an odd looking boy.
Interesting.
There's three. One of them touches on the lack of rules thing, but there's three points in this film where I laughed out loud.
Mm-hmm.
What at first was like because of the lack of rules, how does stuff work? What's actually dangerous? What's not? There was a bit where a truck is trying to attack somebody and the truck adjusts its own wing mirror. Who is that for? That made me laugh out loud.
The thing is, I think some of that stuff is what makes me like it.
The next big laugh was the ice cream van playing King of the Road.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because it's such a non-ice cream van tune, as far as I know. Like, it's such a non-ice cream, but it's such like it's this proud ice cream badge, like, I'm king of the fucking road. Like, that was funny. And then the title card at the end that was very Poochie has been taken back to his home planet.
Yeah. A couple of days pass, everything goes back to normal.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
A Russian spy platform that was armed with nuclear weapons and plasma or something, like, shot down a UFO and then everything was okay on a title card at the end.
Yeah, machine says when a UFO hiding in the comet's tail is destroyed by a Soviet space platform disguised as a weather satellite equipped with nuclear missiles and a laser cannon.
Okay, Stephen. I do wonder whether it suffered in editing, because, like, the editing, some of the cinematography is not bad. It's quite nice. Special effects are beautiful. I want to talk about special effects after.
Drew, you're either getting too close to the mic or your gain's still up too high.
Yep. I'll move that further away. The editing is fucking horrible. I think that the most obvious aspect of that is the fucking, I know it's an AC/DC soundtrack, but the music, like, when the music kicks in and shuts off, just seems to be, oh fuck, I've not played a song for a while.
it's completely
fucking at random. Nothing to do with the nature of the scene. It's just music playing, then it cuts off.
What about that thing that? What about the scary music that just comes on, like?
Yeah.
Oh my word! I don't. Yeah. I'm sure I've heard that. Is that taken from something else, or is other stuff taken from that?
Well, that started with Psycho. What's it called?
Yeah, Psycho.
Psycho. Yeah.
Can you not hear me?
Jaws. Yeah. No, sorry. I was just talking loud.
Oh, that's Jaws. Okay. No, I was making sure because we had sound problems.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Jaws was
bored. Whatever that's saying.
I was watching. Jewel. Yeah, Jewel. Jewel does that a few times, just with that very, you know, high strings kind of sound. Like, it's just, it became a thing when you want to create tension. It works very well.
Yeah, but it did seem it was more almost badly done. Somewhat comedic. I was taking more of a comedy tone from it, or a tongue in cheek.
Well, I don't know whether intentionally though.
Yeah, I mean, it's got dark humor, but it wasn't me.
Well, one thing I was sort of half expecting in this, and I want this version of the film. I wanted the Amish to turn up at some point and be like, "Yep, this is what we've been waiting for." Like, that would be great. I love that film.
Yeah.
No, but then all the machines, like all the road vehicles and other motorized things, would attack the Amish villages.
The Amish.
There we go. That's it. Maximum Overdrive 2. The Amish story. You know?
Okay, so the
fully Amished something.
Amished and ready.
Right to bear Amish.
We should probably give some sort of vague outline for anybody that's not actually going to bother watching it.
She's not crazy and kill everybody.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. Machines are sort of come to life and start doing it. And Drew points out in various, there's not one set of rules, things happen.
So is
there's a bit when the vending machine's just shooting fucking cans at people.
Yeah,
that made me laugh. Early on, I was like, okay, I'm on board for this. And then it just sort of settled down into a bit.
Like it.
There's moments.
Yeah, it's just like, it's not how a vending machine would work, you know.
Because you can literally see like the potato guns inside the vending
machine. Yeah. And then it stops, they're gone, yeah.
Well, the dude, I think it's like the coach or whatever, just gets it in the head, just like it. But no, the special effects, the trucks and, you know, all the trucks and vehicles and stuff, because some of it's obviously models. It has to be models, but there was only a couple of scenes where I could tell it was a model. Like, the special effects were actually very good, and like all these trucks drive. You can't see the driver. Like, they're doing it really well. Or cars driving on the road, you can't see the driver.
Most of the time. Rosie very much enjoyed pointing out the bits where it's like, you can see an arm there.
I never did. That's cool. But yeah, I thought very well done.
It's nice that they're practical. Films of that era, when they do practical effects like that, there is a realness to them, because there's a slight clunkiness to them or a slight heaviness to them that you just don't get in CGI. With CGI, everything's weightless.
Filmmakers have definitely started to realize that. Even the later Star Wars stuff and the Star Wars TV shows, they've realized that, like, some things should just be a dude in a rubber suit and it feels more real.
Yeah. You don't have to do it on computer because you can. But that was Lucas. Lucas didn't like actors or films.
I mean, the worst.
Or Star Wars. Was the prequels.
The worst were the prequels, where it's an entirely CGI set and a person talking to an entirely CGI character. They don't know where to look, even really, and they don't. They've got no sense of what's surrounding them. It's horrible.
I want them to do a revamp of the prequels and cut out Jar Jar Binks. I'm sorry, he is a step way too far.
Also, cut out everything else.
Yeah, I was going to say episode one. The only bit you need to watch is the lightsaber bits.
None of it.
It's about 25.
No, not even that.
It's so different
from, like, the lightsaber fight in the first film is just Darth Vader doing this.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan kind of doing this. Like, and then you go to this overly choreographed, like, kung fu fucking bullshit. No, I don't want
that. And Darth Maul's lightsaber would never work in real life. It's way too dangerous.
I'm okay with it, because it's a staff. He's using it like a staff. Like, he's losing the ability to slide his hands and use it like this, but, like, it kind of makes sense to me.
But let's not get into Star Wars.
Cool.
You get me on cool. You win the argument with cool, but that's cool. All you win the argument with.
But before we started, when we were talking about the scores, I mean, you were talking about how the rules, you know, we're talking about the rules. One of the things that annoys me every time I see it, I spotted it the first time I saw it, and it doesn't annoy me. There's like when the kid is cycling through his town trying to get away from the machines, a woman hanging at the window, and her hairdryer has killed her. But instead of burning her, it strangled her.
It's turned around. Again, rules. How did that happen? If literally cables are alive, we're fucked. You can't do anything about that.
It's like there's a bit where the electric kitchen knife cuts the woman, and
that
smashes it to death.
That bit made me chuckle. Highlight of the film for me, that was.
Yeah,
the first half, it starts out quite well with the, you know, vending machine shooting children, and then, you know, it dies down a bit, and you meet the characters with no character, and there's a lot of just like ambling around in the truck stop doing nothing in particular, bit bored. Won me back over with the fucking Morse code when the truck start communicating in Morse code. I was like, I'm back on board.
Yeah, that is weird. But interestingly good,
Is it weird that I found it kind of funny, but in a black humor kind of way, that when the kid basically just witnessed his entire baseball team and was it father just get like coach. Murdered?
Coach. No, his dad. His dad works at the truck stop. That's why he.
Oh yeah, up. Yeah. The coach. Yeah, just and it's like wow.
This is
like,
another one. The machine. The rules is a bit weird because it's a mechanical device. The thing that pops.
Yeah,
you know, it's electrical. The pump's electrical, but the handle is purely mechanical. And whether it can squirt or not, is based on the mechanical.
Also, if it can manipulate cables to strangle somebody with a Walkman or a hairdryer, then it can manipulate the hose and just fill itself up.
Surely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Also,
the rules are terrible.
Can you actually garrote someone with Walkman headphones? Because I would imagine
it'd be a very gentle garrotting. It would have to be very...
Your neck would break the things,
I think you could probably do enough pressure to cut the blood off.
If you tied it lots of times, go around lots of times to make it strengthen the actual...
They're quite strong, but I don't think you could strangle somebody, but I think you could cut the blood off to their brain and just do that for long enough then.
We'll just have to try it.
Try at home and email in the results.
If anybody in the audience enjoys erotic asphyxiation, then next time you're doing it.
This is scientific asphyxiation. There's nothing erotic about that. Yeah.
Probably you're just working into their... They're going to do it anyway.
Their thing, And if we don't hear anything, we'll just assume that it is lethal. Because
That makes sense. Have
we heard anything?
Talking about dark humor, black humor, there is the road roller that flattens a kid as well. That was quite
that was surprising. It didn't go Warner Brothers. I would have enjoyed just like a flat kid.
On his spin, he goes around on the. Definitely, not squished and flattened, but like not the full shape of the kid.
It does have that a little bit in common with Home Alone, in that it's like Warner Brothers style violence, but like the realistic version of it.
Yeah,
I've never actually watched Home Alone.
I really enjoy Home Alone. I do, but I find the violence in it actually unsettling. Like, I'm not easily unsettled by violence, but because it's cartoon violence with real repercussions, in a children's movie, there's something more unsettling about it.
I can't stand, in this particular set of films, Macaulay Culkin. I liked him when he was in Fallout. So as an adult actor, I think he's great. But like in that particular film, oh man, it just gets under my skin. It's just too American. I mean, the
kid actors can go very, you know. I mean, a lot of people didn't like the kid actor in Psycho Gorman. I think we all enjoyed her a great deal.
Yeah,
but
brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very hit and miss with kid actors.
Is it that they didn't like the character? Because she was evil.
Yeah, that's
no, I think it was because she did play it quite pantomime. I think it was that. I think she was good at playing it pantomime, so it comes across well.
Yeah, at first I wasn't sure, but then I realised that what she was doing was deliberate and consistent.
Yeah, she plays it very big.
God, that's such a good film. It might get up to a 10 at some point. I don't know.
I'm just trying to remember some of the other silly deaths. Oh, yeah, like Dunk, the kid's dad. So he gets sprayed by Diesel. Why is this not working? But then later, he basically demi-suicides for no reason.
Yeah.
You can't see. Yeah, but I've got... What? You can't see.
Also, again, with the mounted gun.
Yeah.
If you can move that, that's just a simple, what do you call, it's not hinge, is it? Pivot. What is it? What do you call that mechanism? The pivot, A joint of something. Like, if it can do that, then it's limitless in terms of what it can... Yeah,
it's very silly.
Alien magic.
And I'm not super, like, finicky about rules and that, but, like, you've got to have some sense of, like...
consistency
for the protagonists more than anything, so they can strategize around what they know about what is possible.
But that's why they never did, though.
They never do strategize anything. They just when the trucks are circling at that point in the film, when the trucks are circling, everybody seems so fucking unconcerned as well. Like the actor directing is just like they're getting pie and they're just chatting, like, no, not in a like we're bunkered down kind of, just like in a we forgot what kind of film we're in kind of way.
but also, I don't think the characters were at all interesting enough to carry that kind of scene.
What, with one exception, I love Bubba. The waitress. As in, I am in love with the Bubba and the waitress. I thought the waitress was great. I loved her.
She was good.
I just didn't find. Yeah, the characters did nothing for me, to be honest.
That's another fun thing they could have done with the waitress. Like, make her the one who is oblivious to what's happening. Is just like, she's like, anyone want pie? Like, taking care of people. That could have been fun. While everybody else is, like, losing their shit.
Yeah.
Also, underarm RPG. I found that interesting. It was odd.
Sorry, underarm RPG. When
using the bazookas, why is it like this, like underarm, like
anti-tank weapon?
That was just odd, just filmically odd.
I forgot about the other. Oh god, there's an actual bit of plot at the end, and I forgot it happens in the background, basically. But they're chatting while you're not like looking at them talking to each other. Maybe it was a voiceover added at the end, but I forgot that they actually make a Bill, you know, Emilio Estevez's character, actually has, at one point, just before the end, a theory about what's happening, and I forgot about that.
Yeah, which is confirmed by the card at the end.
Yes, exactly. Aliens wanted to do something, but then this Russian weather satellite one shot it down.
So to be for people watching, Emilio Estevez comes up with the idea that if aliens wanted to take over a planet, obviously you'd use fucking magic to turn technology against the residents and kill them all.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I always figured that if aliens were gonna like attack Earth, do it like just like shit posting through the internet is a good start. They could do it completely invisibly, and. You know, spread all the misinformation and all that kind of stuff.
Well, have you heard so we're living in particularly conspiratorial times, and Spielberg's just made a movie about, what's it called? It's called, like, The Revelation or something. That's not right, but it's essentially the government admitting that aliens are real and blah, 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 blah.
It's almost exactly the thing that Trump said a couple of weeks before it came out.
And I watched the trailer on YouTube. It looks like modern Spielberg. It looks awful.
Well, it's very I don't want to say fascist friendly, that's not the right way to put it. I've not seen it, so, but apparently it's very, oh, you should respect your own regime type. Recently as well, it was about a year or so ago, there was a film, and we talked about it, but we've not actually fully discussed it.
Post 9/11, things went in that direction.
Mm. Yeah, the sort of jingoistic
government.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the government doing bad stuff.
Doing everything we do is to protect you, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, that's the two ways they wrap everything to, authoritarian up, is it? You know, it's,
on the trailer, 90% of the comments were, this is clearly the government preparing us for the fact that aliens are real. This is like, I want to say 90% of the comments, I'm not exaggerating. It was 90%.
It's like in the mid-90s when we found that dinosaurs were still alive.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, right, out of all of the conspiracies that are happening in the world, aliens is one of the more benign ones. Like, I'll take well, your own.
That's true.
Aliens is one that just, it's a coin flip. Are they nice? Are they not? I mean, I lean towards the more, I mean, recent world sort of throwing this a little bit into question, but like the more advanced a society becomes, the more compassionate it becomes. I do lean that way. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
No, I lean that way too. I just think sometimes we regress, but then that is the road to, you know, that's how things go.
Yeah,
but also I think generally aliens probably, if they were capable of like relatively arbitrary intergalactic travel, which is arguably scientifically impossible anyway, they probably just wouldn't find us interesting. They'd consider us a, you know,
that's the road side picnic. Which is that's interesting in itself. But I like to say we did historically, but are you going to travel that far just to be mean?
Yeah.
People, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just that I didn't.
But the difference between like colonizing North America and killing everybody to do that and traveling to another solar system to do that is you have no idea what's at the other end.
We can imagine a technology that allows them to get here, maybe they can see what's here, but at the same time, at least colonization was sort of premised on finite resources.
Well, yeah, like, but what I'm saying is, you know,
if you've got the whole universe to go to, surely, right, rather than going to a planet that's infested with aliens that you need to wipe out, just go to a different planet
But also, it seems like you don't get the same returns as you did with colonization. Like, if you're going to travel the next galaxy, that's going to use so many more resources than you could ever get from another planet. I mean, there's one argument that says that when a society gets sufficiently advanced enough, it finds a way to basically shrink itself in. So, for example, our equivalent would be uploading our consciousness to computers and then just having a very sustainable, you know, imaginable.
I mean, the scary one, though, is the dark forest idea and similar ideas where, like, the reason we have not received alien contact is because everybody knows what's out there and is staying quiet.
Everyone knows what's out there and is staying quiet.
Yeah. All the other aliens, because they're more advanced than us. They know what can be alerted to your presence, and they don't want to alert it.
Yeah,
and a similar idea, like,
or just, but they just know what we're like and don't want to let us know.
But also the idea that like they would wipe us out to stop us becoming a threat, which I think is the more plausible.
What if the aliens are like that tall and they're like, shit, these Earth humans can like kick our asses.
That's been a thing in a lot of science joking stuff or even serious science fiction is, what if the aliens are 10 times taller than you? You know, because let's say for argument's sake that dinosaurs survived and evolved, but instead of being...
As is documented in Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, there is that. The larger dinosaurs died off. We know that the others were the avian ones, which evolved. Mm. Imagine the larger dinosaurs have survived and became, you know, a sort of sentient type society. And they would obviously work in a completely different way to us because of the sheer size and biology and everything, you know. And that's just on the same.
I think in Three Body Problem, this is just, Andrew's told me this because I didn't get this far in the books, but the aliens are like the size of a grain of rice.
Okay.
Like little tiny aliens, which is which and they make contact with you. Humans don't find that out until much further along the line. But yeah, they're little tiny aliens.
Yeah, because like people the size of grains of rice could come in, land, look around at Earth relatively easily, covertly.
Yes. Yeah.
It depends on your technology as well. Your technology might not be something that we look at. I mean, we don't scan constantly for everything that we that we know exists.
Or
you know, we do look a lot at electromagnetic radiation and things like that. That's you know.
And we also like there's a limit to how far a radio, like you need a lot of energy to direct a radio signal to a particular place. And we've been looking for radio signals, and like lasers would probably be the, you know, at least as far as our technology allows, lasers would be your best bet. So we should be looking for laser signals, but then blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
I mean, again, that's very difficult. That's a,
yeah.
What if, yeah. I'm sure there's a name for this argument. What if we've been veiled, as in like there are aliens all around us, but there's been like they hide us in. So they we're closed in to like a phony solar system.
We're a national park. We're a nature reserve.
So they're under strict orders not to interfere with us. Maybe until
prime directive.
Yeah, prime directive type of thing. Yeah, and we're just monkeys on a nature reserve.
Well, I mean, none of this is new, really, is it? I mean, if you look at back,
it's all been explored. Yeah,
The Daily F stood still and stuff like that. You know,
good film.
Very good. Isn't some of the things we've been talking about.
But the one thing we know is that we don't know.
Yep. Until because Spielberg's made this film, it's obvious that the government are going to do a disclosure. So. Buckle up.
All right, I've got a question for you guys, right, about dating. Is, on a first date, asking what? Whether... So obviously for a first date, you want interesting conversations and stuff. Like a lot of people sometimes get stuck in the, they get stuck in the small talk and don't get out of it, right?
Mm.
Is asking your date whether or not they think aliens exist a good conversation starter, a good icebreaker?
But it really depends. Like for me, yes, because the people who won't respond well to that question are not going to have a good relationship with them anyway. Mm. So it's a filter, right? Yeah. So anything you're interested in is fair. This is facile, but classical first dates are like cinema or restaurant, and I think they're both awful fucking choices. Like go bowling or something.
Mm.
Like there's no awkward or far less chance of awkwardness if you've got something to do and something inherent to what you're doing to talk about, and that you know that will lubricate the gears and you'll get talking, and as opposed to awkwardly sitting over a dinner table with somebody you've just met, and or cinema where you don't get to talk at all.
Yeah,
cinema's never
Like second date, restaurant, great, but or you know, second, third, whatever. But like, go bowling. Go. What are other things like bowling that you can, you know, that kind of thing?
Darts, pool,
like board games, like just
mini
like
golf. Something.
Mini golf, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah,
isn't that an American sort of one?
No. Me and Rosie went mini golfing a month ago. It was great fun.
It is another classic, like film and TV date location.
I mean, my strategy has often been. First date, quick coffee date, usually like, you know, like a lunchtime thing or nothing more that you have to burn an evening on. And then once you've broken the ice, like it becomes a lot more like, I don't know, natural, easier, you know?
Mm.
But it's like, do something quick, easy, no stakes for an icebreaker, get the first one out of the way.
Also caveat, bowling and mini golf, not if you're a very competitive person, that probably won't serve you very well. Maybe a colouring date.
Mm-hmm. Colouring, yeah. Oh, board game cafes.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. Although
the problem with that is that I'm known in these places and it would be just my luck. Everybody I know would turn up.
You've got your picture up. Do not serve.
With this man.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a Chance Encounters in, Bristol, which is not too far from you, right?
Yeah, what?
There's a Chance Encounters.
This is not too far. I can say yes to that.
Yeah.
What does everything mean? What you were saying.
Have you ever been to the board game cafe Chance and Counters?
Oh, Chance and Counters. I thought you said Chance Encounters.
Well, that's the pun.
I hate that. Boycott this fucking place.
It's a good place.
I've never heard of that. There's Thirsty Meeples in Bath and some other places.
Okay. I hate that less.
Yeah. The Meeples are those little... sort of a, the standard 2000s style pawns and video board games. But the one we've got is Norton TCG for trading card game. They play all the different credit, you know, like Pokemon and what's it, Lorcana, the Disney one, and Magic the Gathering and stuff. But they also have like board games in it as well. Hey,
Yu-Gi-Oh,
yeah, kind of thing. Yeah.
What about Digimon? Is that a card game or something?
I'm not sure. To be honest, I don't know anything about any of the others apart from Magic the Gathering.
Digimon's weird. I don't know nothing about Pokemon or Digimon, but I do know in Digimon there is a Digimon that starts out as a cat, like a cartoon cat, and evolves into a beautiful woman.
Yep,
as its evolution. That makes no fucking sense.
Angie Woman.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I should have known you know about Angie Woman.
Oh, that's a real... Okay. I thought you were just making something up there.
I really quite enjoyed Digimon Seasons 1 and 2, which is interesting because it starts off really, like, childish and light, and it ends with, like, children being kidnapped. It's really, like... the transition, it just gets steadily more dark, and it's quite nice. Season 3 is basically them just trying to sell the card game. So so it turns out that seasons 1 and 2 take place in a Digimon card game or in a Digimon game and then or something like that, and then season 3 onwards is just like them just adverts basically. So I stopped watching. I literally
toy adverts. There's a new He-Man film, isn't there?
Yeah,
I saw a trailer for that when I went to see the.
I'm so interested. I don't care about He-Man, but it looks like they've hit the right tone. I think they've done it too late, but it looks like they've hit the right tone. It's got Alison Brie as what should we call that, priestess or something, like the evil lady.
I didn't even know she was there. I mean, I saw the trailer. I have no idea who. I still didn't.
It seems totally similar to that D&D film that was quite fun. But I think that film. It's a bit late for He-Man.
Actually, what did I rate that on? Because that might deserve a raise. Me and a friend of the show, Carla, went to see Mandalorian and Grogu, I think it was.
Rosie
will see it. Me and Rosie will see it at some point. But
you'll see it as well, right? I thought you meant that. Like, Rosie didn't want to see it, so you went with somebody else. Yeah?
No. We're just
What did you think? I mean, not to get into. I don't want to get into it.
No. So basically, the short review is it's just like a long episode of The Mandalorian. It doesn't.
That's what I've heard. It's two seasons of The Mandalorian is what I've heard. Just like it's just episodes. Like, because storylines end and new ones start and stuff.
It's just more of what we've seen before.
Anything outside, basically.
Mm. Yeah, and so it's fine, but it doesn't add anything.
I enjoyed the groovy bits because that's what I'm watching it for. You know?
Yeah, it's very cutesy. Lots of cutesiness. That's nice.
There is, of course, the Jabba the Hutt's son who's like ripped.
Yeah. That's all right.
Lots of CGI, obviously. And
I mean, we should be used to CGI in Star Wars now. It's fine.
But sometimes they have good CGI occasionally and you don't even realize.
Well, yeah. But anyway,
I'm not anti-CGI. Sometimes CGI is the right tool, but it's not always the right tool.
Yeah.
Talking about Spielberg, look at Jurassic Park, how the blend of the
different work brilliantly.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was a dinosaur's paw on a stick or head on a stick or whatever.
It still holds up. It's insane. That's so old now and it still holds up.
It's still good. Still, I think color matching is the important thing. Mm.
A lot
of light studios do not bother to get the lighting right.
Mm.
And they just stick something. And I mean,
well, what they do now is just film everything in dead lighting. Like, if you see what's the one that was almost famous for that? The one of the Disney ones that's like almost entirely CGI. And it's just everything's just lit completely flat so that you just don't have that problem. But it makes the whole film just look dead.
Yeah.
But actually, the CGI in the original trilogy of Star Wars, even though it's very dated, it suits the films really nicely.
The third one.
Yeah, it's all practical in the original.
Like practical up until Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, yeah. okay, not with a computer, but they the spaceships are not real spaceships, so it's not. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, no, they didn't. They didn't build a space a giant space station either, but they built models. None of that's. I'm forgetting one key thing here. Chris is young, and he probably hasn't seen the original.
No. I am talking about the originals.
No, I don't mean the films themselves. I mean the original versions.
Yes, I've got the original versions. I torrented them.
In terms of computers in the original Star Wars was using computers to track the cameras.
Yeah, the cameras and the models. Yeah. They made a system. They invented a system for that.
Yeah.
There's no overlaid CGI until the third film.
Okay, so all right. Special effects then.
Pardon?
What's the CGI in the third film?
They used it to enhance the space battles.
Oh, and the scene with the ship on the desert. It looks like it's straight out of a 90s video game. It's definitely CGI.
Now, these digital effects to get rid of the thing that's probably holding it up. Jabba's barge.
Oh, right. I wasn't sure if you meant the Jawa sandcrawler.
No, I meant the Jabba's barge. Yeah.
The Jabba's barge. No, that's a model. It's just super important.
In Return of the Jedi?
Yeah. Model. There's a model.
There was not CGI.
There was a CGI of that.
Computers could do.
Yeah, I mean, remember, like, 1982 when they filmed that, you had ZX Spectrum and the Atari 800.
Okay. Yeah.
And the 64 wasn't even out yet. You know,
Look at Lawnmower Man if you want to see how good CGI was much later than
All right. Okay. Yeah. I'm using the.
But no. Not until Lucas's remaster stuff did they put any.
It's also where's the line between digital effects and CGI? You're using a model, a computer model.
Yeah, computer generated model instead of something else. Yeah.
Right.
Another example of how it's mixed but badly done. If we're talking about, like, for example, the good side of this, Steven Spielberg's first Jurassic Park film, Alien 3. They didn't use a lot of CGI. Again, it looks like there's more CGI than there is because they did the model work and overlaid it using computers to overlay it. So the alien scampering through the tunnel.
I quite liked it. I know Alien 3 is not one that's beloved so much by fans of Alien, but I quite like Alien 3.
Have you seen the recut of it?
I don't know. I've not seen it for a very long time, to be fair.
Well, okay, can you remember where the facehugger comes out of? Does it come out of a dog? No, or
I watched it at release, and I don't think
There's a much better cut of it. Not director's cut, because he's disowned it, but there's a much better cut of it. Which fixes basically a lot of the things that the studio fucked up.
Like a prison film.
Yeah. If you watch the original version, characters just disappear at one point and stuff. and a whole side plot just goes. Yeah, that's not computer.
That's models. Okay, fair enough. Now I'm watching it. It does look modelly.
It's composited, but it's composited, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably maybe done something digital, maybe at that point, to get rid of the whatever was actually holding the barge up when it was a real thing.
Okay, yeah, all right, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, I meant that all along. But anyway, the effects of the original, they've aged very nicely.
You should, if you've not watched it recently, watched, obviously, very much inspired Star Wars in terms of the aesthetics and stuff. 2001 Space Odyssey, which is, I think, 69, significantly earlier than Star Wars, and the special effects in that, they still hold up. Like, for the most part, they still hold up really fucking well.
Mm.
They really pioneered the using the models in a sophisticated way.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry about that. I did tell Dad last night, but I should have phoned him this morning and reminded him, because dementia doesn't remember things.
I was just saying about the models in 2001, still very good.
Oh, they're excellent. I mean, again, the thing they got right is the lighting. They lit the models to go with the backgrounds.
And the design of things. I think this is something Star Wars and, I mean, again, Star Wars is very much inspired by 2001 in that regard, but like the design of things looks, everything in Star Wars looks like it arose from a culture and a specific place, and like everything looks right.
Mm.
one of the best ones, obviously I'm going to say this, but one of the best ones for that post 2001 Space Odyssey is Alien. Like, everything is made with the idea that it should do something. You know, nothing's meant to be nothing's arbitrary in the designs. But everything that is there has got to have any, and like, there's little props and things that work.
Yeah.
Just in case they wanted to pick something, you know, so there'll be a little box that the engineers will pick up and it'll have lights and extending areas. Mm. And, you know, but no reason.
I do love the computed screens in both Alien and 2001, actually. I love that future. Yeah, it's very different. In Alien, it's very gritty. It's like a terminal stuff almost. And in 2001, it's very like, it's late 60s, but it's like early 70s like design. It's like Swiss style. It looks really cool.
I always found it bizarre how in Star Wars, Darth Vader's suit, actually all the button stuff do nothing. And like all the nerds have like inferred things for them to do. And it's like...
There's a great Red Letter Media video about Star Wars' suit, and they just go through the Wikipedia article about like what every bit of his suit does, and then like just pissing themselves about it. Like, you know, his helmet was made out of this material, designed by this person, polished with like voodoo hide, and
there's a lot of backstory filled in.
Because Star Wars has been so nerdified in that way, autistic, if you will. That leads to the thing in the modern Star Wars films where everything is like, where did Han Solo get his famous waistcoat? Like, where did Han Solo get his, like, I fucking hate that shit.
Oh, well, you've not got people. Oh, well, we'll call you Han
Solo because you're on your own. And like Chewbacca, it's clearly Chew Tobacco. Like, it's clearly a nickname. And then we go back, and this is Lucas's era. We go back and meet like Lumpy Backer, and like it makes no fucking sense. The worst example of that is in the fucking J.J. Abrams' 2009 Star Trek film, which film I actually quite enjoy as an action.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
I believe you. So it's called Bones. Because he's a Sawbones. It's an oldie-worldy name for a doctor, like Civil War doctors. Like a Sawbones. That's why the doctor is called Bones. And then in the modern film, he's in the shuttle and is like, yeah, I lost everything in the divorce. Wife took everything apart from my bones. It's like, you don't even understand the rope. You don't understand. It's young people. They don't fucking read enough.
Yep.
Nobody knows anything anymore.
Did you show the audience the picture of the Star Wars that you showed us?
The picture of the Star Wars.
Grandma.
Is that the Star Wars you like?
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. People at home can see the Star Wars, yeah.
See it, right. Because what makes it look computery? Are you sure that's actually from the original cut as well?
Yep.
That's composited in a...
Oh, no, the whole thing's composited. Even in the new one, they tidied up the lines and stuff. That's all hand cut out, basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you look at The Empire Strikes Back, because they shot it on snow, you know, white background, that made it so much more difficult because dark, was really hard. And so if you look at
that, looks great. You can see that the Hoth battle scene looks great.
Mm-hmm.
It still looks great, It's one of the best. That's models, mate. For the same thing, look at watch Alien 3 and watch the bits where the aliens on four legs scampering around and stuff. It looks like a computer graphic, but it's not. It's a model composited into a...
Have you seen that footage? Because in Alien, I think it was Alien rather than Alien 2. It might have been Alien 2. They intended to use dogs as the aliens. Like a dog wearing like whippets or something. And there's footage of like little whippets running around with like alien heads and stuff. And it's
Yeah,
have you and seen? There's a few little clips of Balaji Badea, the guy they got, you know, the guy they found tall, skinny guy to play the alien.
Looks like an alien without a face.
He looks like a basketball player type thing, you know. Long
like arms. The fucking like the aliens at the end of Close Encounters that scare the shit out of the big lanky fucking greys, like still scare me.
Well, anyway, the point is that they got him to do all these different movements and. You know, crouching down and moving in weird, inhuman ways, and everything to try all the different stuff. Some of it is actually pretty good, but I'm glad they didn't use any of it, really. it's still a man, you know. It's still a man in a suit, sort of thing.
That's Alien has that thing in common with Jaws. Like, the less of the alien you see, the better it is. Yeah. It's not always true, I don't think, but it's often true.
Yeah, the more action aliens inspired films, they're fine with all it. I tell you what, have you seen the TV show, the Alien Earth TV show?
No.
Oh, neither of you have, right. Okay, because there's scenes of that in that where you have that, because there's more to it than just the alien that we are familiar with from Alien. There's actually alien in broad daylight in that. And you think, that's not going to work. Oh my God, they managed to make it work. It's amazing how well they've done it. I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to start on other things when we're supposed to be talking about.
Okay, all right. I've got something about the Maximum Overdrive film that I was looking at. Where is it? I've lost it now. Okay, so it made... so its gross worldwide revenue was nearly $7.5 million, and it cost $10 million to make, estimated.
Yeah. Well, I've got it $9.75 million here, but this is what's up. I'm on Wikipedia, so $7.4 million.
Usually the budget they state isn't usually the whole budget. It's like, unless they want to inflate it, there's marketing and stuff isn't usually included in that, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just reading off the what you call it, IMDb page.
IMDb.
It's also tough. I mean, it's a bit, because they often, like, is the $7 million like over its entire lifetime?
Yeah, it seems so.
Often they're just like opening weekend numbers and stuff.
What it says here is $7.4 million or $3.5 million brackets North America.
Okay, so it's just North America,
Often,
like, films that are a flop can often make their money back, you know, over time.
Yeah, TV releases and stuff probably did it,
TV money and
whatnot. Well, wow. I did not know this existed, and now I do. Right, the original story, it was a short story in one of his anthology books that he wrote, and... The original story was called Trucks, and there was actually a television film called Trucks in 1997.
Oh, based on the same?
Yeah, on the same story. Yeah.
That could be interesting.
There is a remake, so I think we should probably look for that. And a potential second remake, Stephen King's son Joe Hill expressed interest in writing and directing a Maximum Overdrive remake with some alterations to the original material.
I want the Amish in there, and I want character development.
Yeah, characters,
this actually seems like, if this was happening, was this happening worldwide or just in the States? I forget now.
I assume worldwide. Like, they said the comments trail, as they called it, was, you know, affecting the whole...
Yeah, but so it's like, what about the army with the guns and the tanks? Like, that's going to be one... Yeah. Like,
I think maybe that's the point. That's the aliens' plan. Get rid of the military. They don't really care about the civilians so much. You can come down and stomp on them.
Yeah. Just get rid of the military.
I'm going to read something from Wikipedia. It's only one long sentence. In the 10th season episode of The Simpsons, this is Maximum Overdrive. Sorry, Maximum Homer Drive. Homer Drive. features a pilot where Homer takes over truck driver Red Barclay's delivery and finds out his truck is controlled by an onboard computer. And Yardley Smith, who plays Connie in the film, is the voice of Lisa Simpson, as we know. I totally forgot. When I watched it again recently, I had totally forgotten. I should remember she was in it and a few of the other character actors that I remember from the 80s and stuff. But I'd totally forgotten that Giancarlo Esposito was in it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's barely in it.
And he just suddenly came back and he's older. There's like a whole section of his career that... Well,
I think most people associate him with, like, the Breaking Bad stuff. For me, he's always the one in Do the Right Thing who gets his trainer scuffed. And that's and this is before Do the Right Thing.
He's so. middly young there, I would say. So still on there.
Yeah. Well, you're still very young in Do the Right Thing. Very young.
Yeah,
man.
That's what I'm saying. He's kind of this on this side of
things. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And also, of course, he's in Megalopolis.
No, is it? We do need to. Is that going to... Because it's your turn next.
Yeah.
What's going to be your... Because we're talking about doing Thingy with Ozone, weren't we? But I guess that'll be a separate one if and when we get Ozone. But
yeah, no, I want to play the Megalopolis card.
Baseball.
The Megalopolis, good.
Right, now here's the thing: I'm not saying it's a good film.
No.
But I am saying it's an interesting film because Francis Ford Coppola's sold a bunch of his vineyard to fund this film. Like, he wanted to make this film, like, this was his magnum opus in his mind.
2024, yeah.
Yeah. And some of the directing decisions are really interesting.
I like that for use of that phrase.
Yeah, some of it
that's
is like
that's very yes, Minister. Very brave decision.
It is. I mean, there's like throwback directing from like Hitchcock movies and stuff like that, like really old school stuff. So I found that interesting. Like, but also this is so like you can tell like it's very boomery. You know, like it's very like the.
I don't know what people mean when they say that anymore.
Like, because, well,
like grandpa's understanding of modern society and culture.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of the ideas and the stuff is clearly not really gelling with current times and stuff like that.
yeah.
But yeah, as Shia LaBeouf, it's got like a fucking all star cast as well. Lawrence Fishburne, Shia LaBeouf, Adam Driver, of course. Yeah, Giancarlo Esposito. He's the bad guy in Star Wars. Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. He's a very good actor. He's like very good actor.
It's good. Yeah. I like him.
Aubrey Plaza.
Oh,
Natalie Emmanuel.
Oh, yeah, she's from Game of Thrones, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who this one is. John Voight?
Never heard of him.
Are you joking? Are you joking, sorry? Oh, no, Kristen.
He's joking. He doesn't know who John Voight is.
I don't know. Who is John Voight?
Very famous. He's very famous actor from like the 70s. But
he was in so much.
He's very, very right wing now. He's in National Treasure, which you've seen. He's National Treasure's dad in National Treasure.
Oh, okay. Yes,
I'm trying to find his.
He was the wizard in American Wrestler. I haven't seen that.
Just to give you a taste of what he's like now.
He was in the Bratz movie. That's where I recognize him from.
What Drew just said, when Zoran Mamdani, I can't speak, won the New York election, Voight called him a communist and demanded that Trump terminate his election. So
he was a good actor though. Back in the day, he was a very enjoyable actor to watch.
He was in Catch 22,
Mission Impossible,
Cowboy, of course, he's very famous for Midnight Cowboy. Yeah. Deliverance is one of the main guys in Deliverance. Is in the Odessa File. Runaway Train. Heat, 1995 film. Heat, he's in that. Anaconda, I forgot he was in. He's in Anaconda. That's a film. Enemy of the State, he's in that. That's quite, yeah. That's Will Smith, isn't it? The main guy in that.
Scientologist.
I would argue that Enemy of the State is the better of those kind of films from that time.
Oh my god! In Megalopolis, Adolf Hitler is in the cast list because they show some footage.
He's in the cast.
Rest of cast list alphabetically. You go in, and then and it says
presumably in
Adolf Hitler, as self.
Oh, no, okay.
Special guest star, also starring.
Yeah. Oh my god!
Many thanks to In Memoriam.
Hitler's got his own IMDb page.
Yeah.
Oh, we should go through the Hitler opus.
Oh my god!
Well, I thought you were going to say we should do Lenny Riefenstahl films. That's, you know.
Let's just think a new podcast: Hitler's favorite movies.
Well, I tell you what we do. Okay, for season 4 and 5 of Space Virgins, we'll watch the entirety of Hitler's opus, and then we'll watch the entirety of Stalin's opus, and answer once and for all which one was worse.
You need to watch a lot to get that, though. I think
a lot of fucking documentaries.
Documentaries and Hitler and Stalin. Have any of you seen the current World War II documentary? with Tom. I mean, it's his name's in it. It's World War II with Tom Hanks as the actual title.
Oh God, no, I'm not watching that. Documentaries just get fucking worse over time.
Yeah, they do.
Well, I do like a World War II documentary.
But there's the War at War, which is actually quite good.
Yeah, they've done it. But I thought about this and I thought, why is this coming out? Other than, you know, to make money for Tom Hanks is probably all those people. But I thought about it and I thought the one thing that probably Americans have no education about these days is what happened in the 1930s. Obviously.
Yeah.
You know, and it's showing people, I think there's a lot of it showing people how things are built up. And I think it's interesting that the way, you know, it's not saying anything new. There's not any special, oh, we've cleaned up all this new footage and done this. It's, you know, it's very much a little bit of a, it's not in linear order either. It's in order of, it's based around certain, you know, specific subjects rather than being a linear story, which is quite interesting because then they sort of explain, why did it matter to America what Japan was doing, and you know, explains why, you know. I think it's like what we need at the moment, and well, we probably needed it 10 years ago to be honest, but what we definitely need at the moment before it gets out of hand again is a film like, you know, like Threads or The Day After or that kind of thing. We need something like that, but the modern.
I don't think it would hit the same now.
I think
there's also a lot of like, nuclear war is really fucking bad, but there's many ways in which it's not as bad as we're sort of popularly... Like, for example, like, nuclear winter.
There's a bit of argument about that.
99% probably not a thing.
I don't know if it's as high as that, but you know. But
it's pretty solid. On modern cities, you're not going to get the firestorms that send the ash up that high. And then also, like, radiation, like... If you do a ground burst, yeah, the radiation stays there for a while. You do an air burst, and this is assuming the weapons are designed to be efficient, which, if you want to get maximum value, they probably are. Like, you can go back to ground zero and live there, like, a couple of weeks later with an air burst. Like, the problem is they're very big bombs.
Yeah, they're very big, and the infrastructure has all been destroyed.
Yeah, no, that would be the problem, is the collapse of civilization, not all films, not the more documentary ones, like, I know it's not literally a documentary, but more documentary ones like Threads and that aside, like, it's always the radiation and, like, fucking mutants and nuclear winter. It's the collapse of civilization that is fucking terrifying. that's what's going to fuck you.
It's having no access to food and fresh water and
water. Yeah.
All the things you take for granted. Well, that's the whole point of the name of the film. The name of Threads is, you know.
So a film that is about the civilizational collapse and how that affects people, I think would be.
Well, I think that's.
I don't think we're in a period where people care. I think it's been. This is one of those things that seems a bit too easy. But like the idea that because we had a couple of generations without in the West a big war, putting aside a big war where we were actually a threat. Like we become unafraid of it, and politicians become unafraid of it in a way that the post-war generation, they were afraid of it. They did fear it. I think there's something to that.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. If I knew the answer, I'd be writing the hit film now. But I obviously,
As that era fades from living memory, we so do the lessons learned from it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why we're repeating. The early 20th century, 90 years later.
Yeah. The blaseness with which people are talking about nukes these days is like that does feel a little bit like because the thing about I was saying about Spielberg's film preparing us for some disclosure, but that's obviously nonsense. But there's an element I can't do sentence anymore. But there's a grain of truth in that. They definitely use the news to normalize ideas so that they can do things. I do feel like we're being normalized for escalation to nuclear warfare in certain areas.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I mean, Trump's been talking about it since he's had the first presidency. So can't we just nuke them? It's like
there's a lot of news stories like what would happen, if blah 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 with nuked blah blah blah. Like I do feel like it is a little bit getting us prepared for doing that. And of course we see ourselves as the one who would do it to somebody when in fact, it's always going to be.
I've said this many times in many places, is that when it gets to the point where the absolute worst humans that have ever lived, like Netanyahu or Putin or Trump or whatever, once they realise, no, there's no way, there is no magic that's going to keep you alive forever, so you can keep gathering.
Well, I think another aspect of that is for the world leaders and the billionaires, it's not that big a deal. They go down into their bunkers, they survive, they're fine. Like, that's part of the, fucking problem as well.
Yeah, but that's
you should only be allowed to declare nuclear war if you're like strapped to the top of whatever your presidential palace is. You know, like essentially,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. Is that these people, once they realise that no matter what they do, they're still going to die like everybody else. You know, you might live longer. You might, you know, be able to cheat it a bit. You know, medicine and what have you, but you're still going to die the same as everybody else. Once they realise that, people like Trump, Netanyahu, and Putin, those three in particular.
I mean, Putin's been the most reasonable by fucking far of those three. That's the one, which is worrying in itself.
Yeah, the worrying thing is, why is he so reasonable? But then, you know, there's all these rumours about, you know, I don't know what the actual things are meant to be, but, you know, it's always like virgin's blood and, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that there's a grain of truth that there's probably medical things they're trying.
Well, they've got the best medicine money can buy, but I think Putin is also, like, he's quite, looks after his health. Trump doesn't.
Yeah,
he's the opposite of Trump in that respect.
So the European media is ramping us up for war with Russia, and apparently now Russian media, in response to that, is ramping the Russians up for war with Europe. Yeah. We're just creating a completely unnecessary war for literally no fucking reason, and terrifying.
It's a way to make more money for billionaires again. It's literally
for sure, but like that's the one. That only takes you so far when there's nothing to buy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but they don't believe that, though. They don't believe they can lose.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things it becomes too abstract. I think when we've gone this long without a major war, like, it becomes an abstract thing. It becomes, I don't know, it's in a realm of thought that isn't quite, same as climate change. Like, it's very clear what's happening to us. It's very clear what the solution is. We're not doing it.
Yeah, it's a problem too big for human minds, almost.
No, it's people that are making money out of it don't want to stop making money out of it.
But then there are things that don't line up with that, because it's like, for example, there's a lot of people that want to, like, you know, cut all the benefits, all that kind of stuff, not realizing, of course, that benefits are a fantastic economic stimulus.
That's willful ignorance in that case, I think.
Yeah.
Talking about language like we were earlier, I fucking hate all that benefits and tax credits.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
But the thing is,
in terms of climate change, I think if the public will was strong enough, like if we were literally burning shit down and protesting in the street endlessly, like, it would happen. There is a point at which they are responsive to the popular will. They have to be. But we're not. When I say we're not doing anything about it, I kind of mean the populace. Like, the reason why the oligarchs aren't doing anything about it is obvious. But why aren't we? Why don't we care more? I mean, even us individually, personally, why aren't we burning shit down and forcing the government to do?
Because of comfort.
And it's because it's like Chris says, it's so big and abstract. It's so hard to... We can't imagine, you know, an individual response to that. And they force us to think in individualized terms.
Yeah. The Thatcherism.
Yeah. But we got off track from a silly 80s movie about machines going crazy.
Yeah. Have we said everything about the film?
We've mentioned it.
I think we've mentioned it.
Well. What am I putting it down as? I'm going to do the official review now.
I think five. It's so... The second half was really fun.
Well, the second half was about it. Like, they've got a couple of things they're trying to achieve that starts to make sense. So they've got their final goal is to get out of there and get to an island where they know there's no roads and things, you know. It's like I can't remember what they call it.
Something like Haven, but not
Haven,
that.
Yeah, Haven's the name of the island. It's, there's no motorized vehicles permitted. That's what
it is.
But they still have microwaves and vending machines.
Not super. They still have cables, though. That's my worry.
Yeah, cables, that's it. Yeah. they're going to somewhere where they think there's less.
But is it that cables are like the tail of the appliance? Like, if you just have cables,
oh,
then
That's all rules in the film game was. So I'll take it.
Yeah.
Fuck it. But, yeah, okay.
They've got the plan to escape, which they, you know, there's the final part, and they get on a boat, a sailboat, obviously, and go to this island. But the other plan they've got is they're trying to rescue. They think this guy's still alive, and they try to.
Yeah. Even though he was a prick.
Yeah. Yeah. He's horrible. I mean, that character's
absolutely. I mean, he was trying to sexually assault.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's their first little sort of plan where they go through the sewers and you know, there's some cool little things and planned bits.
But the first half should have been us meeting the characters, like disaster film style, where you meet the characters in their normal lives, you get to know them, you see the fringes of the thing happening, and then the second half should be the thing happening. But they buck that. I'm okay with not doing things, you know, the usual structured way, but they did it so badly, they should have stuck to the structure.
All right, I've given it a 4. Is that official?
Oh wow!
I'm giving it a 5, and that's more. It was a fun watch rather than a good watch.
I don't think the second half redeemed it as much as
no, you that's guys fair. Did. Yeah, it's not like the second half is amazing.
I couldn't latch onto the characters. There were bits I enjoyed, but they were the more slapsticky. Watching a kid get his baseball team mowed down.
That was fun.
I don't know. Yeah, it was funny,
I think with a better, more character, because Emilio Estevez is really like the lead, I would say. And yeah. A better actor or a more character. He's not a very good actor, Emilio Estevez. He's the worst of the Estevezes, I would say. A more charismatic actor, a better actor, I think, would have elevated it a little bit, but. He's likable enough.
I don't think the cast really had much bearing on it.
I think girl was hot, like tough girl, she was good.
Mm-hmm.
Was great.
Yeah.
But she's nearly 70 now.
Okay, so I think I'm developing a rule for my under over of 5. If it's above 5, so if I say 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, so the top 5.
Did you say 6, 7 there?
No, I didn't. I would watch it again willingly. And then below that, it's like one.
No, I get that, but there's some excellent films that I would never want to watch again. Because it's such like a singular experience. There's some amazing films that I, or at least like for 10 years or so, you know, practically never would watch again.
Can I have an example?
Not every good film is a good rewatch film. There's been one recently, but I can't think of what it is. There was a film we watched in a group actually, and we were like, that was fucking amazing, and I never want to watch that again. Like very specifically, because it's like very harrowing, and you know, like that kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I'm only saying that as a rough.
It's a good rule. Rule of thumb, though. Yeah, no, I think it's good. Yeah.
All rules can be broken in this one. You know, in
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The more I think about it, the more I'm going to drop the score as well. I think I'm not going to go far. But I'll go to 6 instead of 7.
I'm working out that each score has a feeling that I have towards a film, right? Yeah. I have like almost like 10 different feelings, and they sort of like, this is why Psycho Gorman is changing a little bit. It's because it's like I think about it a lot. The jokes in it stay with me. The number of times
ratings should be adjusted later on, because a film stays with you sometimes and grows in your mind.
When you go to anything that's on like Wikipedia or whatever, they do tend to talk about contemporary reviews versus later reviews.
Yeah.
But the number of times I've just said, "Oh, my hunky boys," when something's gone wrong. I don't know. It's you know, or eating the ceremonial eating of the vanquished.
Yes.
Nobody wanted the warrior's death at any point.
The warrior's death, does it? Yeah.
Well, it's, funnily enough, it came up. I don't know if you're. I probably, you know, retweeted or whatever you call it on your particular platform, but somebody was talking about what's his face? Oh God, I forgot his name. Dirty sex writer.
Dirty sex writer.
James Joyce, wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
You guys having trouble hearing me because I'm talking. You guys are really quiet, and I'll say something, and you're both sort of going.
No, we're just trying to figure out what you meant.
Oh, right, okay. I get paranoid about sound problems now because of the.
Like what?
Hello. No, but something was talking with James Joyce and his ratings to his lover and stuff and the other day.
Oh yeah.
I mentioned that we did it a video without linking the video. I thought that was a bit too, you know.
Oh no, always link the video. Pour it up.
Flog the merch while you're at it. Drew is sporting the latest merch T-shirt with a hole in the shoulder.
T-shirt with his sexy shoulder peephole. What's that muscle called? If I had one,
is that the trap?
It's one they talk about a lot when they're bodybuilding.
Is it that one?
It might be.
Or is that one of the other ones? leg or something. The one I've just mentioned.
Yeah.
I've got some. I've not gone as sexy as you though, Drew, with the ones.
The thing is, I'm going to have to change this one quite quickly because otherwise people are going to know it's the exact same T-shirt. I can't just go, no, it's another blue T-shirt.
I got lots of black T-shirts, but they're not plain. They're all things like this.
Obviously, this one.
Yeah, throwback to season one of Space Virgins.
Remember the can't? What's that about?
It's like it's a can't-do attitude. If something's too hard, just don't bother.
That's definitely my attitude.
We're Americans, not Americans.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I don't. Yeah.
Next time,
Megalopolis. We got young.
Megalopolis. I can arrange that.
Fair warning. I like it because it's a little bit of a. I don't say so it's bad. It's long. Good. It is quite long. It's bad but interesting. I think is the thing.
Yeah. Like I don't think you need to prep us for this one. I think we know. I think we know what we're getting into with it. I'm expecting fucking stupid, but so many interesting, weird decisions.
That's it. Also, I think I know next time my turn comes around again, the film's not actually out yet, but I'm looking forward to Stop That Train, which is a film about presumably stopping a train. Complete cast of drag queens. Looks to be very funny. Has good reviews so far.
I love a stop a train movie. I like disaster films in general. It's runaway train films.
Yeah. Well, have you seen what's it called? Oh god, the one about the train, the really famous one.
Blue Streak.
I'm thinking of the big bus. That's what I'm thinking of. Sorry, not a train. Big bus. I'm thinking of.
What's that one?
The Big Bus. It's basically this sort of thing.
It's called The Big Bus. Okay.
Is it like The Bang Bus?
The Big Bus. 1976 American satirical comedy film.
Okay. Does that have like Gene Wilder? There was a spoof one of those. That's the train one, isn't it? With Gene Wilder, like the
that's the train one. Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. And then I remember The Big Bus.
I think I've seen Big Bus. Yeah, no, that rings a bell. Yeah, but I'm going to watch that again because I do love those cheesy disaster films from the 70s and amazing and 80s.
Blue Streak is a 1999 film.
Yeah, that's not the one.
That's not what it's called then. Yeah.
The train was called the Blue Streak rather than the film.
Yeah, Silver Streak.
Oh, Silver Streak.
I think that's it. 1976 comedy action film. Gene Wilder, Joel Kleber, and Richard Pryor. Yeah, that's the one.
Stupid film. Love it.
Yep.
there's actually a true story where there is a stop the train scenario and two of the people involved, one is like 2 days from retirement and another is a young up and coming kid. True story. I'm trying to look it up now because
didn't somebody try a speed type thing and it didn't work as well?
I've never seen Speed.
Amazing.
Yeah, I don't know why. Just never got around to it.
Oh, we've got to put that on the list. Me and Rosie watched it when I became a bus driver.
Have you seen
it? Well, learning.
I've not avoided it or anything. I just, for some reason, just never got around to watching it.
Have you
seen the Father Ted spoof of it?
Yeah, back in the day. Yeah,
the Father Ted spoof of it is very good.
Oh, the milk float, of course, yes. I think that's actually we rewatched it recently because of me being a bus driver and stuff. So it was kind of like training for extreme scenarios, and
training.
We really enjoyed it. Actually, it's aged really well.
I've always looked at it as one I'd probably enjoy. And
it's one of Keanu Reeves' hunkier films as well.
he's not a good actor, is Keanu Reeves, but he's one of those who makes up for it with charisma.
He's a likable sort of person.
Sandra Bullock.
I did watch. I watched Jewel, and Jewel is very much like it's just one dude in a car. It's a very contained film, and I was like, "What's another like contained film?" So I finally got around to watching Phone Booth. I've held that one off because I thought I would really like it.
Is that the college
film? Yeah, and I watched it. I watched it the other day, and it's deeply mediocre. Like, really good idea, really poorly delivered.
Is it in real time? Is that film in real time or close to it?
I didn't know anything, but I think it was pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching that film and finding it really interesting because I was expecting something completely vapid. And I actually found it vaguely interesting. Like you say, mediocre, like it wasn't groundbreaking or nothing, but like I kind of felt like
I wish it was more 70s-ish. I wish it had been a bit calmer, a bit
Slower. Which version of the Phone Booth? Are there multiple versions?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's just the one.
2002, Colin Farrell.
Oh, that sounds about right, yeah.
It's like the setup is amazing. But it's like everybody says and does stupid shit, which kind of took me out of it too much. It's very Tarantino-y in terms of like delivery, its style. It's got that early 2000s kind of stylized the kind of thing. I just wish it was a bit more 70s, a bit more grounded, a bit slower, a bit more tense.
I might have to rewatch that, you know.
It's not bad. It's a good five. It's not a shitty five.
I don't know. Yeah, I remember being intrigued by it, not expecting much and not getting much
There's a film with a similar kind of vibe that Shaw put me onto, actually, that I liked a lot more. I'm going to find it. It's actually a Spike Lee film, which I didn't know. It's a very un-Spike Lee Spike Lee film.
Son of Sam? Summer of Sam?
No. It's about a bank robbery, essentially. Let me just
I love a good heist movie.
Yeah, it's a really good heist movie.
Presidents of the USA or something? It's not that one, is it? That was
Inside Man. It's called Inside Man, 2006. I'd never heard of it. Shaw put me onto it, and it was really fucking good. Like, really good.
I think I might have seen it once.
It's Phone Booth-ish, but better, I would say, because people don't make stupid fucking decisions all the time.
I'm not going to
give it a 9.
Because I don't remember all of it. I will watch it again.
It's very, very good. Very good film.
Oh my god.
What?
IMDb has just outlined my recently viewed pages and is like Adolf Hitler. you seem to be interested in Adolf Hitler's filmography.
Well, it's like, I'm interested to see what Drew thinks of this particular comedian and sort of activist type guy. Like, what do you, I mean, I've said I like him, so that's a giveaway that I do like him, but what do you think of Nish Kumar?
Oh, I like him.
Yeah, you see his face through here, but he's basically like me, but he does things about it instead of just being angry all the time.
Yeah, I've seen bits and bobs. For me, comedy isn't the venue to progress those things, or music, or I don't really care about that. I'd rather have people who have an academic or understanding of these things.
At the point, well, I know what you're saying when you say that.
I will say. I think there's a lot of leftist media that is politically active in its form and entertaining. And I think all it does is catharsis. And in this situation that we're in currently, catharsis is a bad thing because it dissipates the energy. You feel good from watching it. You feel like you've done something. You feel like you've contributed. And you haven't, and neither has he. It dissipates. This isn't really about him.
No, but it's a little bit of preaching to the choir, I think, sometimes, yeah.
That as well.
And not really furthering. I'd rather watch, like, a lecture by somebody who studied this shit for 30 years.
You would, yes.
Mm. But yeah.
How do you get through to other people?
Is this onboarding people? I would say Hassan. I don't know if you know Hassan.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I was about to say Mehdi Hassan. That's one of the videos I just
watched. No, not Mehdi Hassan. The YouTuber Hassan and Twitch streamer Hassan. He's a big sort of onboarder for Hassan getting Piker. Young men into the... I think he's Hassan Piker, thank you.
Getting young men into the...
This stuff, I think only people who are on board are going to go watch this.
I never heard what you said. An onboarder for young men. What, sorry?
Yeah, to get young Ben, he set his thing up as a counter to all the sort of right wing, what were they calling it back then? Neo right? What were they calling it?
Oh, the
alt right.
New alt right. Yeah, all the alt righty kind of Twitch.
Or sometimes they call it. They sometimes call it barstool conservatism.
Barstool, because yeah, he set himself up explicitly to onboard young men onto leftist things rather than right wing things, and I think he's effective. Whereas this, and not to demean, like it's. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to enjoy or go and watch, but nobody's 99%. Nobody who's not on board isn't going to see
This is what I was going to say. It's not just his stand up that I was talking about, but because I was going to mention specifically that him and Mehdi Hassan did a video, which was quite interesting. But again, it's. I mean, it is academic to my mind the way they discuss it. It's not. Podcast,
I don't think it's a bad thing. I'd rather.
But the point is, you're not going to get my racist neighbour to watch. Oh, you're not going to get me to watch a brown guy do a comedy either. But...
Yeah, no, that's,
yeah, that's kind of right. Yeah. It's kind of like on Fedi when people post, very, very sort of like polemic. What's the word for teachery? Teachery, like left wing. Like as if you're speaking to an audience who's like not on board.
Idiots like me.
No. I do it, but it's preaching to the choir. It's echo chamber shit, and it's catharsis, which is the bad thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, oddly enough, this is almost exactly what that interview between Mehdi Hassan and.
I have my thing. Like, I enjoy Chapo. I watch a lot of Chapo, and it's the same thing. Like, it's doing the same thing. I'm not claiming to be immune from this.
Yeah, no, it's just the two of them are talking about those. I mean, they're both of Indian extraction as well, so they talk a lot about that, and they talk about, but there's the things they're talking about which they've not got an answer either, because we don't, because we none of us control the media or politicians. But they're talking about, I think the specific thing that he mentioned that was worthwhile for me, to be said, is that he's talking about the current situation and the current. I mean, this was filmed, I think, a year ago when there was race riots in Coventry. I want to say last year was it Coventry? Mm. I'm not entirely sure, but we've just had it again this year. And the point is that the politicians never follow up on it. They never call it out what it actually is and follow up. So it just. And that's the problem. It doesn't matter how many, you're right, it doesn't matter how many comedy routines or protest songs or whatever there are, if nobody's doing anything about it, then what are they going
to
do?
Need to read the theory, understand what we're organising for and about, and do that.
Don't want to do the academic part, that's the problem.
The academy's compromised at this point as part of the problem.
Well, yeah, that's true as well. But all the big famous British places are having right wingers in for talks and stuff now, and a lot of the students.
Well, that's nothing. It's when they turned their back on Marx in the 60s and went back to Nietzsche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and David Graeber kicked out of Yale, wasn't it? Yeah.
Did I mention to you, Drew? I might have mentioned it in our group chat. Sorry, this is getting well away from the video now.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the Alexei Sale, Miriam Margulies, and Michael Rosen.
Yeah, I watched a bit of it, and it was I don't know, celebrities chatting. I don't care. It's just like if they weren't celebrities, it's just three old people chatting about fairly mundane stuff. And
I think it gets better as it goes on, though. So
three people talking about relatively mundane stuff.
Alexa Sale's got a grey beard, but at least I'm not.
What I did want to say, you've got very, like, whichever way it goes, you've got very Alexa Sale energy.
I don't think I'm as charismatic by a long way, but
I think both visually and in demeanour, you've got a bit, yeah. He's jollier than you.
Yeah. I was going to say that this is the thing I say, I'm much more of Nish Kumar.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen this kind of things. So yeah, I very much enjoyed him. I just again
Well, the show that he did most recently. It's funny. We talk about comedy a lot, and you say you don't like it, but I haven't watched as much as I used to because. Not because you've influenced me in any way or whatever, but because I can see your point a little bit about it's just catharsis. Mm. It's not a bad thing. Catharsis is not a bad thing to...
I'll tell you what I'll do, though. After this, I will link you to a stand-up comedian that I have very much enjoyed recently. Who's, I can't remember the name now, but I'll find them after.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Anyway, I believe we're... I believe we've bookended a tiny bit of the actual show, as usual. With our nonsense.
It was a fun one to watch. It was a good pick, I think. It was a good pick because
it came into my head because of the things you've been recommending recently, and obviously Psycho Gorman was a big part of that.
Yeah,
there's two films you put me onto that I watched. You put one in one of them, but something Wang or somebody mentioned the other one or something. But it was there was a couple of more films that I'd watched recently that I hadn't seen, and it was good. But it all made me think of
It was a fun one. Yeah, I think. Yeah, we want a variety of kinds of films as well.
Yeah, there was another one.
It's going to be interesting.
I don't know what you think of They Live as an option.
I know the name. I can't remember.
Basically, I mean, the guy in it's a shitbag because he's an ex-wrestler. Rowdy Roddy Piper is the main guy in it, who was not a nice person. Anyway. And Keith David is the other main character in it. The guy from he's in The Thing. He's the other survivor from The Thing. It's in Kurt Russell. Anyway, essentially, this guy discovers a pair of spectacles that lets you see everything properly, so you can see and all the adverts have got subliminal messages behind them. John Carpenter, I think that film. Most of John Carpenter's work, actually. Most, I wouldn't say all.
Okay. Ta-da!